is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might have.
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
We are going to be talking about awakening the masculine tonight in the Shame-Free Zone. We might also be talking about the divine feminine, but my guest tonight is Joan Hartfield and Tomas Hartfield, and they're both with the Divine Feminine Dash Awakened Masculine Institute. They've been researching relationships for about 12 years, and tonight they're going to tell us just exactly what these concepts mean, and I'm sure a whole bunch of other stuff. Joan and Tomas, welcome to the Shame Free Zone.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be on with you.
Well, and you're both in Maui. I'm so jealous. I wish I was in Hawaii right now.
But you're in paradise. That sounds really good, too.
our studio's in paradise. I'm actually in the Tahoe National Forest, which is not a bad place to be either.
Oh.
Yeah. So, I actually recently had the pleasure of interviewing Caroline Muir, she and I talked quite a bit about awakening the divine feminine. We touched upon the masculine just a little bit, so I'm really hoping you guys can kind of bring that full circle for us tonight and help us understand why the masculine even needs to be awakened.
Lovely. Well, let's just see where we can go with this. It's a topic that I'm quite excited about, having journeyed into a fair amount of it. I'm sure there's much more to go, but where can we begin?
Well, you know, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your research, just for starters, kind of give the listeners some idea of what your work entails.
Well, my research, I think, began possibly back in 1969.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. When I woke up in a hospital bed in Saigon, and I was wounded in the war, and that started a long journey of awakening that started with 8.5 months of hospitalization, as I literally had to choose to come back into my body and really want to live. And during that period of time, I had a lot of revelations, including what I would call a near-death experience, where I found myself in a state of remembrance that I couldn't really put my finger on, but I had a familiar remembrance of who I really was beyond this form. And so that got me into a place of investigation that landed me in Mount Shasta, California, about 3 years later. And
that almost sounds like a near-death experience. Would you term it as such?
Well, I'd rather think of it as a near-life experience because because I ended up in a place where I really was ending up in a transcendent state and living more outside my body than in my body. And I realized early on that this was the state of many men. Many men deny the dwelling place of their soul, that being your body. And in my experience, I landed in the arms of a woman who basically took me in and was concerned about my level of transcendence And this being, I was into some fairly serious fasting and meditating, and just completely, really not wanting much to do with the body. But she brought me back in. Her name was Cassandra, and she brought me back into my body and literally taught me how to pray with my body, which was quite a novel experience for me.
That's pretty transformative. Shasta is actually kind of considered a sacred spot for a lot of people. Is that why you went there?
Yes, it is. I had some dear friends that I was quite impressed with their level of consciousness that that I stayed with for a summer, and that was how I got to Mount Shasta, was through a network of friends.
And this idea of living outside your body and then learning how to come into your body, is that a good summary of what it means to awaken the masculine?
A good summary of awakening the masculine, I think, means to drop in and have a reference point of where you are in your body, where you are in your emotional states, and where you are in your compass, or let's say your map of reality. Having a blending of deep sensitivity to the environment and the life around you, as well as the life in you, and a willingness to, let's say, flow. For me, the awakened masculine is a state of being where you're not in a place of fixedness. The primary challenge that I see in most, let's say, masculine conceptualizations involve a lack of flexibility. And so what I'm finding is that the more fluid awareness that I have in my mind, the more I'm able to assimilate information much more rapidly than if I was strictly in a mental state. If you look at the situations in the world, I think we can pretty much agree that the reason things don't change very rapidly, the reason we're running, I think, 31 wars on the planet right now, is that the masculine concept of their understanding of what life is tends to stay fixated into power structures that don't get outside of these spheres that are largely masculine dominated. So the masculine awakening is really about integrating the feminine in a way where we can feel deeply with compassion for ourselves and for all of life.
And how, let's say if somebody's listening to this right now and they're like, well, where would I start? Do I have to go to Mount Shasta? Do I have to be in a hospital and, you know, because of war? Or is there some other point of entry here? What would you recommend?
Yeah, well, I think the point of entry for all of us is in the body. And I think if we can drop into our bodies and really allow ourselves to feel from a place of awareness about how much life is in our body, where is our life energy flowing, how is our sexual energy? Is our sexual energy really accessible? Does our sexual energy feel like a gift, or in the case of some people, does it feel like a curse? Does it feel like something that's out to get you rather than something that's meant to take you into an ecstatic state? When we feel into our bodies, how do we feel in our hearts? Is there a sense of ease in our hearts? When we feel into our minds, is there a sense of spaciousness? Or are we operating from fixated belief systems? There's kind of an inventory that we're doing. It gives us a sense of where we are. And where do we feel that we need more life? Because awakening is all about having life in our bodies, life in our experiences, where we're moving easefully from thought to thought, place to place, interaction to interaction. There is a sense of flow. And if things aren't flowing, generally it's because we're not acknowledging what it is that we're really needing. And when I say needing, I don't really mean to say that there's anything really wrong with us. What we're really wanting is what feels good. What in our life is is calling to us. And to be able to identify those things is one of the important factors in finding an alive life that is juicy and is let's say, supported by our sexual energy, our passion for life. That's really what we're talking about.
So we talk about needs, too. We're really talking about the universal needs, the universal need of connection and of really caring for one another, or having enough food and water, or having, you know, clean water, air, as well as being interpersonal needs of consideration.
And so you're actually kind of extending needs to also, like, the global connection.
Share our lives and our hearts with one another.
Yeah, Joan, I'm glad you jumped in. I had a question for you. Are you kind of extending the idea of needs from the personal to a more global concept?
Does that give you a good feeling for what the masculine, let's say, consciousness is looking for? It's an integration, really, of our feminine and our masculine side, where we're not locked into mental constructs, but we're actually available to feel deeply into the pulse of life as it lives in us, and to be able to operate, you know, in our operating system in a way that has coherency. But there's a real movement of our consciousness and our life into life. There's a real flow.
Okay, so did either one of you hear
this
question?
For a lot of men, the their awareness is very much in their passion center, let's say. They have a great deal of awareness of their sexual energy, but it's also what to do with that sexual energy, how to flow it into the world in a way that it can be really received and appreciated and valued. Because if a man really knows, if he really values his own sexual energy and he knows how to harness it and, let's say, offer it, whether it's offering it in a way that enlivens other people's lives by being strong and compassionate and present, let's say, or whether it's being offered as a sexual gesture.
Right. So, do either one of you want to answer this question, which was, do you think personal needs extend to more global needs? Was that one of the points that you were making? Can either one of you hear me? Would be a really good question about now. I'm thinking that you can't. Tomas, can you hear me? And Joan, can you hear me? Okay,
I'm calling them back. Don't know where they went, but I'm calling them back. Do you want to stay live?
Yes, I would.
Right,
what the heck? So sorry to the listeners. Somehow we're having a little technical difficulty here. I think there are Tomas and Joan obviously can carry this program without any of my assistance, but they weren't able to hear me. So let's get them back on the air. Well, I'm going to use this dead airspace here to talk a little bit about my Oregon tour. I'm going to be leaving this Friday, as a matter of fact, headed up to UC Davis. I will be giving a presentation on women's erogenous zone. Are we back?
We're back.
What happened? I thought, boy, she's the most agreeable interviewer I've ever talked to.
I asked you so many questions. It's not funny. I'm really kind of stymied. I'm wondering how much the listeners could hear. So I'll tell you all about my Oregon tour at the end of this interview. We're going to try to pick up where we left off. Both Joan, can you hear me?
I can hear you very well.
Fabulous. fabulous, because I really wanted to ask you a question about awakening the masculine. I've noticed that our culture seems to be headed in a predominantly masculine direction, and I'm noticing it especially in women of a certain age. I'm particularly thinking about 17 to 20. So very young women seem to be embodying a lot of the stereotypical masculine traits associated with the dominant culture. And while we're talking about awakening the masculine, I'm wondering if you find that that concept has any place in the lives of women.
Well, I think that any time that we talk about, let's say, awakening the masculine or the feminine, what we're really talking about is what is the healthy feminine and what is the healthy masculine? Because we certainly need both of them in our lives. You know, we need to be able to feel deeply and have compassion for others and ourselves. And we also need to be able to be effective in the world. And I think that possibly what you're talking about with young women is that they are wanting to be effective, and the only model they have right now of how to be effective or what is effective is the masculine. You know, they're the ones that go out and get things done and earn the money and so on and so forth. So it's a little bit of a challenge to really even to see a model of, let's say, a healthy feminine, a woman that is able to still be in her feminine and get the job done. So, you know, the awakened masculine is really the healthy masculine, which appreciates and brings in his, let's say, what we might call his feminine side, but really it's his feeling nature, in which he's able to not only get the job done, but feel what's going on with inside of himself as he gets that job done. You know, is it really enlivening himself? Is it enlivening his partner? Or is it enlivening his children? Or is it enlivening the people around him as he moves into the world and is effective? And so that's what I think is happening to the younger women, is that they don't have a model, very many, you know, of really healthy. I think of myself, you know, some of my models, Katharine Hepburn, you know, goes a long way back, but, you know, she was, to me, a model of a really healthy, balanced woman. She had her yin and yang pretty well balanced, and there was a role model, you know, someone that I could look at and kind of go, whoa, I like that, you know. But I don't know who's out there now as a role model for the, you know, kind of like young women.
Well, I know from myself, growing up, I was very male-identified and had male role models. I didn't tend to have too many female role models. And I think, you know, in my own journey, being able to have new male role models has been very helpful. So I'm thinking that perhaps the whole idea of awakening the masculine in a way that's healthy and balanced is a concept that probably a lot of young women who perhaps have modeled themselves after male role models could find helpful. And I don't know if you've encountered that in your work or not. But.
Well, we certainly do see that there is a tendency to mimic in our culture. And the personalities, let's say, that are out there. I'm not exactly connected to what you're speaking to in the younger women, because we're not living in cities these days. We're living in the rural area of Maui, so we do come and visit to the cities, and the women that I'm mostly connecting with are 30 to 60. That's the younger 20s. I'm trying to tune into the exact idea that you're referring to in terms of the younger women. What are you referring to as far as your
Well, there are actually some studies that are showing, like in general, assaultive behavior is going down, and female violence is actually going up. So if we look at violence as being one of those traits that's usually associated with masculine behavior, and we're actually seeing a trend in the younger populations of females for them to become more violent, then it seems perhaps there is some identification with that, I would say, out of balance masculine overlay.
Well, if we look at let's take the entertainment industry as a whole, and we look at, you know, these are run by megalithic corporations with agendas, and we look at, you know, what all of the movies I have at a taste of what's being produced lately, and the level of violence is continuing to escalate. So the modeling that we're getting through the media right now is definitely, you know, I think we could assume it's a hyper-masculine type of situation where a lot of violence, a lot of domination, and all the way to, you know, the destruction of the world, you know, and the battles that were being bombarded with visually is quite alarming in terms of the level of saturation. So our culture, basically, I think, is what you're experiencing in these younger women is starting to play out in the demographics in terms of violence, and I could certainly see that as a reflection of how media driven we are. And we can go on and on and on about how it is not taking us towards connection. It's all about disconnection and defending ourselves and fighting, you know, the powers that be. They're not necessarily empowering types of videos. So I know that the shadow aspects of our personalities do need outlets, but it certainly does seem that the shadow is the pendulum is swinging deeper into shadow as we look at our culture, which is where a lot of trapped energy in this terminology is stuck. Our capacity to celebrate our aliveness, you know, we're in an extremely negative tonality right now in our culture, and the masculine is still at the helm. I don't think there's any disagreement there. What I'd like to talk about is how we can take that helm back and start to steer our culture, our young people, all of us, back into the loving embrace of our natural tendencies that we were born with and are still present in our biology. Our biology is very interested in preserving, let's say, the genome of our humanity, given a chance. And so what we want to do is find out how can we give us all a chance to embrace our humanity at the levels that we're capable of.
Wow, I would love to hear some more about that, too. And perhaps one of the things you could also speak to is when you're envisioning the divine feminine and the awakened masculine, do you see that as actually, you know, a balancing of those energies in the individual, so that it's not just about women getting in touch with their divine feminine and men awakening their masculine, but that both genders are looking to balance those energies?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because unless we have that within ourselves, unless we have, let's say, a healthy masculine and a healthy feminine within ourselves, and we really know what that is. And it's funny, it's like within the words themselves, even just the word healthy, you know, you kind of know what a healthy feminine is. You know, you have a sense of, you know, like a good mother. And you also really kind of know what a healthy masculine is when you think of good father. And when those aspects of ourselves, when we're, let's say, nurturing ourselves in really kind ways, and at the same time, we really know how to, let's say, take ourselves and make sure that we, you know, get good meals and exercise. And we're exercising, let's say, the healthy masculine part of ourselves to get out there and get the job done, right? But
right.
Get the job done within ourselves first. That's the first job that we have to do. And once that is balanced, once we have a sense of that within ourselves and we feel good, we feel connected to those aspects of ourselves, then we're much more likely to be able to have a healthy relationship with someone else who's also in the process, let's say, of balancing their masculine and feminine in healthy and awakened ways.
Great answer. And Tomas, please do enlighten us on how you think we can move forward to a more awakened and divine stance. It sounded like you were kind of talking about globally, like how we could push the world into a place that is more hopeful and more positive.
Right. Well, the buck certainly stops with each person, and I think that for the man, in a certain sense, it's a little bit more challenging because we're still running a lot of what I would call old paradigm energy, you know, and assumptions. And most men that come into our trainings at the Divine Feminine Awakened Masculine Institute are really looking for a way to connect deeply with their sexual energy. And sexual energy is so much more than sex. When we talk about sexual energy, we're talking about the energy that virtually creates everything that happens. Everything that happens in the world is driven by our sexual energy. That's our passion to do, our desires. And many men are needing to really have an idea of why they're alive, what they came here to do and be, as I mentioned earlier. And when a man starts to get in touch with those ideas, he's really needing to have a sense of the energy that it's taking him to push those ideas out into the world of what it is, what he's about. And we cannot do it from a mass culture place because the cultures right now are totally driven by corporate reality. So we have to go deeper than what's being projected on that outer screen and go into our inner screen of reality and realize that what we're knowing and thinking has an original concept that is uniquely our gift, that we have to go underneath the culture that we're living in and obtain these pulses, and these pulses can be felt. And so the first thing we do is get a man in touch with this pulse that lives inside of him, his passion, and we teach him how to harness these energies and how to bring these energies up into his consciousness so that he can do what he came here to do and be who he came here to be. And the being part is generally the hardest part because the being is the part of yourself that's present. And what I'm noticing in many of the young men in that are coming into our work is they're really wanting more presence. They're wanting to really feel themselves deeply in life, and they haven't been able to do that in the mass culture. They've been able to disappear, but they haven't been able to have a personal experience of living their life from an inner-directed place. And so we show them how to do that. We give them a good background in how it feels to be alive, how to harness your sexual energy. And that is really the basis of all of the work, is harnessing that sexual energy and refining it so that we can be the change that we've wanted to be.
And cultivating it, too, because it's really about cultivating our energy. You know, the energy, we are born with a certain amount of energy, and you see kids running around, and, oh, my God, it seems like their energy is limitless. You know, it's like, whoa, quiet down, slow down, you know. And then, you know, as you go through life, it's like you realize the preciousness of the energy because, you know, you don't have... It appears, you know, as you watch people, particularly if they, let's say, are not cultivating their energy, our life energy is our sexual energy, and there's many ways to harness to cultivate that energy, whether it's through yoga or tai chi or martial arts or running or swimming or, you know, really the ways in which we connect with our physical aliveness, and we feel it in our bodies, and we allow ourselves to, you know, not just be running without thinking, but actually feel our bodies as we're running, you know, or feel our bodies as we're swimming. And we're not doing it for competitive reasons. We're not doing it, you know, for any reason other than it feels great, and it gives us more energy. So how we continue to cultivate our energy, and then there's all of these tantric and Taoist practices that specifically what they're meant to do is to cultivate this energy. So once we have the energy, then we can really do things in our lives up into, you know, really right up until the end of life.
Joan, question for you. You were talking about running because of the pleasure, not because you're actually trying to accomplish something. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, what do you think the resistance or the learning curve or the block to that can be for a lot of people where, it seems that they engage in a lot of behaviors because it's goal-oriented, and that it actually sometimes might take a little bit of work or effort to stop thinking like that and start engaging in life just because of the sheer joy of it.
I think that's one of the things that our, let's say, our culture in general, and that's not to say that there aren't, you know, enclaves of consciousness, because there are many, many, many now. But, you know, in general, let's say with sports, kids, they're not taught to do sports for fun. You know, just go and enjoy it. Have fun. Pitch that ball. Enjoy doing that. You know, hit the ball. You know, feel the joy of it. It's all competitive. And so as soon as you do whatever it is, whether it's running, swimming, hitting a ball, whatever kind it is, you know, but you're doing it as a competitive act, you're not really connecting to your body for the sheer pleasure of it. And so we don't have, unless you happen to have been lucky, as I was, and gotten into dance early in my life, so I really... And it wasn't just dance to perform, but it was really dance to enjoy, to have a good time. And unless you have a teacher that really teaches you that, really says, "Oh, this is, wow, how wonderful this is." And it, even in yoga, you know, it's not just to do the postures so that you can attain the postures, but it's so you really feel your body deeply. So it is a learning curve if you haven't received that message, but If you get a good teacher, because I think that's really where it starts. If you can get a good teacher that can tune you into that, then you can start to have a connection with your body. And no matter what you're doing, you start to feel you start to feel the enjoyment of actually what you're doing.
It, you know, it just seems like that would be the default setting that we would all have. We would want to have pleasure and joy and enjoy ourselves. And yet, my experience of working with people and even with myself is that there's quite a bit of resistance to that. That it seems like we spend an awful lot of time up in our heads.
It's true. It's where our society in general hangs out. So to actually bring it down into, even into the heart, even into the feeling nature, even into the emotional nature, I think that's what a lot of therapy is about. You know, people get into their 30s and 40s and they start going, "Oh my God, what is my life about? What's going on?" And maybe they've been, you know, successful and they've, you know, gotten to a certain place in their life, or they're married and they have the kids, but they really haven't tuned in. And so they start to go to therapists, and I have my PhD in counseling psychology, so I've done a fair deal of counseling myself, so I have heard a lot of stories of people, and I know that this is really true, is that people start to want to... They want to start to know what's underneath, what's life really about. And sometimes it takes certain things that happening in life to kind of tap you on the shoulder, or sometimes sort of knock you on your head to start that process of investigation.
Yes.
But once that investigation started, and again, you know, if you find a good therapist or teacher or anyone, they can start to really take you on that journey, that inner journey where you start to feel what's alive in you and what's really important, and connection with ourselves first and foremost, as we've talked about, and connection with others, genuine, loving, honest, authentic connection is what everyone is hungry for.
Now, Thomas, you had actually talked about the awakened masculine harnessing the sexual energy, and is that like the cornerstone of a man's relationship with himself? Is really learning how to harness the sexual energy, and if so, or even whether that's the case or not, can you explain a little bit more what you mean by harnessing sexual energy?
Well, the sexual energy has many different applications depending on how you dance with it. When we're in a sexual encounter, we're dancing with our sexual energy as a way to give pleasure, let's say, to ourselves and to another person. In the harnessing of the sexual energy in our hearts, we're really looking at creating more passion in our life. And I don't know if anyone out there is suffering from too much passion. Generally, passion is what's really suffering. And when we take that sexual energy and we bring it up into our hearts and direct it into our life, we become a force to be reckoned with. We find that our connections with people, our connections with our work, our connections with our play, everything starts to take on an effervescent lightness, because this aliveness that we have inside of us, guess what? It wants to go out into the world and interact with the other, that part of life that's meeting us. And so the sexual energy is really the foundation, because it's really what makes the world go round. And there's so many ways to dance with this very willing dance partner, but it seems that the more we cultivate our sexual energy, the more our life is going to sing with this radiant aliveness that wants to express itself in so many ways.
And I think that one of the things in terms of the sexual energy and the harnessing of that is really learning a lot of these practices that we've been talking about, whether they're Taoist practices, tantric practices, that have to do with breathing, have to do with literally learning how to move the energy from the genitals up into the heart, into the brain, so it doesn't simply stay localized down there and go spoot and okay, well, got time to go to sleep, you know. But there's a way to actually, harness the energy or conserve the energy so that you still can enjoy that wonderful feeling of orgasmic bliss in the body, but it doesn't have to be expelled, let's say, in an ejaculation, so that then all you want to do is go to sleep. It's like you lose your energy. The man loses his energy in that way. So being able to learn how to cultivate the energy and harness the energy and work with the energy and circulate the energy, I find a man is much more powerful and, confident, self-confident. I think that's really what it is. A man gains tremendous self-confidence in learning how to do this.
Yeah, John, do you think that also applies to women, that when they circulate the energy and don't let it dissipate in the form of an orgasm, does that have any benefit to them?
You know, it's interesting because there's really different schools of thought on that,
and different types of orgasms.
And different types of orgasms, yeah, because there's the deep sort of like rolling orgasms that can go on and on and on and on that I've experienced inside my body that just, you know, it seems limitless and doesn't end in a culmination of what we think of, I think, sometimes the clitoral orgasm. So with a clitoral orgasm, very often it's the same thing. It's like, okay, that's it. However, not that ejaculatory orgasms or clitoral orgasms are bad at all. It's all wonderful. It's all
orgasms were created equal.
Yes.
No, they're not all equal. Some of them are better.
Some of them are better than that. but I think that when people, very often it's like in sex, let's say, people go into sex with the intention of having an orgasm. That's the reason they go into it. It's like, I want to scratch this itch. You know, I want to have this experience and maybe, you know, extend it and play with it and so on and so forth. But there's something else that can happen in that sexual interplay and encounter, using the sexual energy to actually awaken our consciousness and bring more of our dreams, literally to bring more of our dreams into the world and to actually have them come true. You know, you can actually use the sexual energy to create things other than, let's just say, babies, because that's the thing that obviously, and that's pretty potent, you know, just the fact that you can create a whole life from that act is huge. So being able to harness that energy, and also, if you choose, bring it into other forms of creativity and creation, so that out of that you are able to, let's say, you know, create, as we did, the Divine Feminine Awakened Masculine Institute, in which we then train people and teach people to cultivate and harness their energy. But, you know, you can do anything you want to with it. But the idea is that once you have the practices and you are, you feel confident with them, then that power that you bring into the world, that confidence or that power, is palpable. It can be felt. People are drawn to it. They're magnetized to it. They're, you know, fascinated by it, because it's a very real thing.
So let's just explore a little bit about what we mean when we talk about sexual energy, because I know for a lot of people, when they hear the word sex, they think about penis, vagina, they think about you know, getting naked. I think your definition of sexual is probably broader than that. And maybe first, Tomas, if you want to tell us what do you mean by sexual energy, and then Joan, I'd love to hear your definition of that as well.
Well, sexual energy is what's going on in your body all the time. Sexual energy is what's driving your respiration, your heartbeat, your nervous system. Everything in your body, there is an orgy going on. Cells are dividing. You know, there's the polarity of interaction is astounding, and it's everywhere, and it's also happening in our hormones. So what we're looking at is how to take this sexual energy and, let's say, in this conversation, delocalize it and allow it to let's say, have its way with us. And by that, I mean allow it to move into our whole body in a way that we can feel it. One of our mottos is embrace your ecstatic, embody your ecstasy. Our natural state is ecstatic. Our natural state of being is ecstatic. Our natural state of being is like a five-year-old's. And when we are in our natural state, this effervescent quality of sexual energy is vitalizing and animating us more than it would be in a normal situation where we're not paying attention. Unfortunately, the normal situation is not paying attention to the party that's going on inside our bodies. But once we start to harness just a little bit of this energy, by that I mean, say, squeezing our PC muscles, the part of your genital anatomy that shuts off the flow of urine, just kind of reminding yourself that you have a sexual energy down there, and breathing that energy up into your heart, letting that energy and encouraging that energy to travel vertically up into your heart. If you do that for 5 minutes, you'll start to notice a sensation in your heart. That energy is actually becoming conscious now, because you're tuning into it. The whole experience of humanity in terms of aliveness is, what are you paying attention to? And so when you were mentioning, Veronica, that some of your students are a little bit, I don't think it was recalcitrant or reluctant to, let's say, go into this because it was, they needed to discipline themselves. How, was that the way you said that?
Well, I was actually, you know, noticing that people have a hard time just going into joy.
Just into joy, yeah.
Right, it's very goal-oriented. We're all very goal-oriented. It's like, well, I'll do this because it's homework, or I'll do this because it'll accomplish this. But to really just step into being fully conscious, fully alive, and in joy seems to not necessarily be encouraged in the culture. And I think, you know, people who are looking for that, they want that state of being, but even in the effort to try to get there, sometimes it seems like it becomes more homework.
Yes. And I think, Veronica, the key word here to jettison is to try. Because what happens is, when we get into into a state of, let's say, extra effort. That effort tends to subdue the natural feeling of joy, because joy, again, is this effervescent quality that just surfaces, and all of a sudden you notice it, and you just start to feel more alive. But it happens generally when we are forgetting ourselves, mm-hmm. and we're dropping into an experience and becoming so saturated with it that it's the forgetting that brings the joy. It's the forgetting forgetting of ourself that brings the joy.
Right.
It's like when you end up doing something for someone just because you feel like it, and you can get completely lost in that doing. That's when we find ourselves most saturated in joy. It's because the life energy is flowing through us in an unimpeded way. Mm-hmm. And so when they're doing if they're learning yoga or they're doing anything, the more that they can find that thread where they can become saturated and lost in the doing, the more likely they'll find themselves in an energized state that I think we could call joy.
Well, I love that. So stop trying. That's very, very good. And I'm noticing how quickly this program is going by, and I want to make sure we cover some other things here, too. I noticed you guys have something called Opening to Love Ceremonies. And I'm wondering, Joan, would you like to tell us a little bit about what are Opening to Love Ceremonies?
Opening to Love Ceremonies are a beautiful way of connecting deeply with others. It's a practice of looking beyond the personality into the heart and soul of another. And we could actually do this even as we, in any of our daily experiences with another person, if we just decide to kind of drop in and, you know, stop looking at, oh, God, they have a pimple on their face, or how old are they, or, you know, am I attracted to this person, am I not attracted to this person? It's kind of like just look through their eyes, and particularly the left eye is the most receptive eye. So if you kind of very gently gaze into their left eye with the intention of looking into their heart and soul and really seeing who they are behind the mask of their personality, then what we see is we see each other. We start to see the divine or spark of light, let's say, that we all hold. And we start to relax into this place where we can open up and connect on this place that's, let's say, other than the personality, deeper than the personality, the place of heart and soul. And so the practice of the opening to love is moving around from person to person. It can be in a circle. It can be kind of popcorn all over. But moving to each other, and sometimes we'll place hands on each other's heart. Sometimes we'll hold hands. But in some way, connect and then breathe together. Breathing together is a very wonderful way of deepening a connection with a person. If you notice what the rate of respiration is, you just kind of hook onto that and you start to breathe with them, and then you just drop in and you move into this place of seeing the love, because really what we are inside, every single person, you know, inside of us, what we really are is this divine being of love. So you look for that, and as you look for that, you start to see that in every person you meet. And the opening to love ceremony is a practice that we actually teach in our trainings. And we actually teach people how to create opening to love ceremonies and run opening to love ceremonies in their own hometowns. We ran opening to love ceremonies here on Maui for 7 years and created a beautiful, beautiful community of people that really went into very deep and profound places and, you know, created a community of people that cared about one another.
Is the opening to love ceremony, is it remotely similar to a puja?
It's very, very connected to a puja. It's a type of puja where we do our goal, if we could have a goal in there, is to reveal the divine, the divine impulse that's present in each being. And it seems to the revealing is what gives us, let's say, permission to actually seek it in our life. It's kind of like a sneak preview of what of what's really out there in another person. But we don't often give each other permission to actually connect that deeply because it doesn't sometimes feel safe or appropriate. But, you know, we're so hungry for it. Once you get a room full of people together, they really want to have permission to go deeply into each other's hearts and eyes and see what's really there.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at the time here. We're almost out of time. You guys have got a book called Romancing the Beloved?
Yes, we do, and Joan has a book called Romancing the Beloved.
Ah, okay, it's Joan's book.
It's a lovely, kind of a memoir novel that she's written about discovering.
Is it about you, Tomas? No.
Huh?
I said, did she write it about you? Are you the beloved?
Well, you know, I was the designated driver, let's say, for a period in this experience that revealed the beloved that actually came through me and her, that really showed us who we are beneath those eyes of ours. Deep inside ourselves, we actually saw the beloved and what it looks like and what it sounds like, what it feels like. And that's what the content of the book is all about, is once you've accessed something so precious, how do you keep it alive? What do you do when you've accessed something that you don't want to lose? And so this book is an exploration in how to recognize that energy in another person, in ourself. It's all about Joan's dialogue. She actually channeled the beloved through much of her experience and still channels the beloved daily with us. But it's all about that conversation with the inner beloved that we all have, that part of you that will never leave you, never divorce you, and we'll always pay the rent on time.
One of the things that Tomas said to me early in our relationship, which just stopped me in my tracks, because as a Capricorn, I have a lot of doing energy myself. And so I asked him what his goals were, and he looked at me and in that way of really looking through me and said, you know, Joan, I have one goal, and that is to love you as perfectly as I can.
Wow. That must have taken your breath away.
Rather. And it started me on a journey of realizing that that is really what we all want, you know, is to love each other as perfectly as we can. And sometimes we have personality habits and traits that we've learned, patterns that we've picked up from our parents that kind of get in the way of that. But that's also the adventure, and the rest of the book is called it's Romancing the Beloved.
A Sacred Sexual Journey into Love.
Yeah. So it's really about that journey that we have through our various trials and tribulations that we all come across in our lives, and into a place of really connecting with and grounding the beloved energy in ourselves and with one another, which is really what we can do. It's absolutely beautiful. It's like I have the relationship with Tomas that I think was promised in those storybooks when it kind of like the, you know, prince took the princess and, you know, went off on the white charger, but you never quite got the rest of the story of what happened after that. And all you, but you could kind of imagine, God, that must have been really great. They must have been happily ever after. So, but the happily ever after part really isn't something that's taught to us. How do you do happily ever after? So the book is somewhat of an exploration of that.
It has a beautiful cover too. We're going to have to wrap up the show, but I just want to make sure the listeners know that they can find Romancing the Beloved, which has got a gorgeous cover, on www.divine-feminine.com. That's divine-feminine.com.
And by the way, divine is spelled D-I-V-I-N-E. Some people spell it D-E-V, but it's D-I-V-I-N-E.
Correct, yeah. So thank you both, Joan and Tomas, for joining me in the Shame-Free Zone. You're both a delight, and then you definitely walk your talk, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you. It's been delightful being with you, Veronica. Thank you for asking us.
We'll have you back on your next book for sure.
Okay, thank you so much.
And to my listeners, I promised you a little rundown on the Oregon tour. I am leaving on Friday. I'm going to be traveling through Sacramento and then up into Ashland and then Eugene, Corvallis, Portland. I'll be gone for about a week. So I'll be giving presentations at Oregon State University, UC Davis, and Club CESO in Portland. So if you're not signed up for my newsletter, please be sure and send me an email, veronica@sexwithoutshame.com. That's veronica@sexwithoutshame.com. I'll get you subscribed, and you'll know where to find me. I'll be doing house calls up and down the state of Oregon over the next week. So feel free to also text me if you want an appointment, 415-407-2932. That's 415-407-2932. And I'll see you in about 2 weeks. I'm actually going to be gone next week, so I will gift you with a repeat of one of my favorite episodes of The Shame-Free Zone. Talk to you in 2 weeks. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian.